We're going to talk about in this session how to have effective meetings. And I'm a big advocate of weekly meetings. How many of you are meeting on a weekly basis with your existing healthcare team? Okay, probably about 20 of you. I believe that weekly meetings are just very important if you are developing a lot of changes in your practice. You really want to transform your practice. You do not have a team that is highly trained, highly educated, and highly leveraged. It's going to be difficult to implement your vision and implement change in your practice if you're not meeting with them on a consistent basis. And I find that many times practices say, well, we just don't have time to get all of this implemented. And it's because we're not making the time. You have to make the time with your entire healthcare team if you really want to implement change and transform your hospital. So you have to spend time working on your practice versus in your practice. So we've been talking all day, those of you who have been here most of the day or this is your first time to join, we've been talking a lot about setting standards in your practice and training your team to those standards. And you're not going to be able to do that just by osmosis, just by people watching and observing how everyone else functions. We have to spend time working on our practice. Michael Gerber wrote the book, The E-Myth Revisited, Why Most Small Businesses Fail and What to Do About It. And he talks about the importance of having a systems-dependent organization versus, for example, in our industry, a veterinary-dependent organization. And so if you want to get the knowledge shared throughout the entire healthcare team, you have to develop systems and standards that everyone is trained to. And I believe weekly meetings is a great way to do that. It's a great place to create your vision and core values. If you need to empower your team and you want to improve the efficiency in your workflow, how many of you have inefficiencies in your workflow? Yeah, a lot of us. And I see that often, and that's where it's frustrating. I go into so many practices and the teams are so frustrated because there's such inefficiency in the way we're operating on a daily basis. I mean, just the simple basics of when the client walks in the door and the client care specialist greets them and what is their roles and responsibilities with regard to getting them checked in, who gets the wait, who puts them in a room, who goes into the room first, who goes in the room second, Who checks them out? Who goes over the prescription medications? Where does the chart go afterwards? I mean, you know, just, and I go into practices and I observe workflows and I see all kinds of variations of how you guys are doing it. And some are good and some are not so good and are very inefficient. And if you're not meeting on a consistent basis and looking at, okay, what are some ways that we can streamline our efficiency and redefine our roles and responsibilities with the team, you're just going to continue to have that frustration with your staff. So when do you train? Well, I believe that you should spend one day a week with your healthcare team. And I would recommend spending 2 to 3 hours a week with your practice team. This could be the slowest day of the week. And some of you, I had one person earlier say, what if we never have a slow day? Well, make a commitment to what day, you know, I've had practice say, well, we've got different schedules for our staff. You know, we've got, you know, somebody's always going to have to come in on their day off. Well, yes, that may be the case. But maybe you can rearrange, maybe you've got one day a week where the majority, I mean, almost everyone is there. That's probably the day you want to have your meeting, where you don't have to rearrange a lot of schedules. I am not a firm believer in, let's say you've got an associate veterinarian, for example, and that's the only day that you can have your meeting and it's their day off. I would not require that person to come in for the meeting. I just don't think that's right. You know, if it's their day off, it's their day off. Now, I've been in some practices where they didn't require that person to come in, but they came in anyway because they wanted to be part of the decision-making that was going to be going on in those meetings. And they wanted to play a part in the changes that were being made. So they went ahead and came in on their day off. And that's a committed employee. So I think the meetings should be mandatory. I really do. But at the same time, you've got to have some discernment about making people come in on their day off for a 3-hour meeting. So you've got to rearrange it somehow to where maybe that day no one is off. And if you can't do that, then it's optional whether they come in. And they're just not going to get to be part of the decision-making processes that take place. And it's up to them whether they want to come. Does the practice stay open? Well, it depends. If you're a 24-hour facility, you know, and you take in emergencies, then maybe you probably should stay open. But if you're a general practice, I recommend the practice be closed. We close the front doors. We put the phone on answering service. We post a sign in advance. I have some practices that just have a permanent sign that stays out on the exterior of their building, and it says, every Wednesday, we are closed from 12 to 3 in order to have a client service meeting to better serve our clients and patients. But if this is a medical emergency, you may dial this number and we will assist you immediately. I mean, ethically, you need to be able to service your clients. If they're, you know, if you've got an animal that was hit by a car, there's some sort of a medical emergency, you can stop what you're doing and tend to those clients. If you have a really large team, let's say maybe you have, you know, 40 plus employees, then maybe you might have a skeleton crew that can stay at the front desk, that can you can keep your practice open, and you rotate that skeleton crew every week. But I recommend if you're, you know, 20 employees, 30 employees or less, I recommend closing down and having a meeting, the uninterrupted time, so that everyone sees the importance of everyone being involved in the process of what we're going to go over as a team and as a practice. But you need to keep your clients informed. I mean, I've implemented this in over 100 practices across the country, and I've never had one client call me and say, we've got to stop our weekly meeting because our clients are too upset over that. I mean, I even implemented it in a walk-in practice in Alabama. And, you know, those walk-in clients can be a little demanding, but they got over it. They finally understood, but it was just preparing those clients. The client care specialists were trained to tell clients the day of the meeting, now, Mrs. Jones, when you come to pick up your food today or when you come in to pick up your prescription medications, now just remember that we're closed from 12 to 3 today, so you need to come in before or after. And it's just training your healthcare team to educate clients about the fact that one day a week you're closed for 3 hours. And your clients they'll appreciate the fact that you're taking the time to work on improving how you service them and their pets. They will appreciate that. Who attends the meetings? Again, like I said earlier, everyone needs to be in attendance. And I find, how many of you have departmental division in your practice? Got any departmental division? You've got the front against the back. You've got the kennel staff that feel ignored. And, you know, you've got doctor's meetings and everything. We don't know what goes on in the doctor's meetings and what they're talking about. Well, when you come together as an entire healthcare team and it's inclusive and doctors are able to talk about doctor stuff in front of the staff, and we address kennel staff issues in front of everyone and client care specialists and technicians, now everyone starts to see the bigger picture and the bigger vision of why we're here. We're here to serve our clients and we're here to serve our patients. And now, you know, it's no longer, our group works harder than that group. And that group over there, they're lazy and they don't have, you know, they don't do hardly anything all day. Now all of a sudden we start to see that everyone plays an integral role in servicing our clients and our patients. And we're in the loop of what's being discussed, and it gives us a better understanding of what goes on in the practice. I was in Houston last week and I was talking about this issue of weekly meetings. And I had a practice manager tell me that they were having huge departmental division. And she had one technician who was constantly griping and complaining about the reception team. And then she had a client care specialist who was constantly complaining about the technical team. And so she said, you know what, I'm going to switch you guys for a week. You're going to go up front and you're going to come in the back. And they did it. And it really changed their whole perspective of how difficult each other's jobs were. They had no clue how difficult each other's jobs were, and so they became a little more understanding of what each other does and how each one plays an integral role in what goes on in the practice. But when you have everyone on the team present, boy, you can make an impact. You can make a huge impact on the messages that you're delivering, the information that you're delivering, the way you want to motivate your people, problems that you want to solve. When everyone's there listening and they're involved, it really opens up the efficiency and motivation of your team. I get this question over and over. Do you pay people? Yes. They are paid for the meetings. And I think meetings should go on during your normal operational hours. Let's respect people's personal life. You know, I have clients ask me, well, can I do this in the morning, you know, before we open? Or can we do it, you know, in the evening after we close? Or can we do this on a Saturday or Sunday? No. We take up so much of these people's time already. Let's do this during normal operational hours so they see the importance of this meeting. We want them to know that we deem this meeting very important. We want to communicate with them. We want to train them. We want to empower them. We want to give them the information they need to do their job to the best of their ability. And we're willing to take time away from our normal operation and develop our folks and develop our team. Yes. Her question was, what about veterinarians who are obviously getting paid on production? And do we pay them to be there? And my answer to that is no. I mean, I think that groomers, yes. But I don't think veterinarians, I think that, and this really starts off in my mind, when you first hire an associate veterinarian, I mean, they're not an independent contractor. They're an employee of the company, and they have certain roles and responsibilities. And one of those is to practice veterinary medicine. And that's how they generate their income, is by practicing medicine. But at the same time, they're also an integral part of the healthcare team, and part of their commitment is to help us make our vision become reality. And they play a role in that. And you know, if you're having this meeting, for example, during like a 12 to 3 p.m., how many clients are you really going to see in that period? You know, you're going to maybe bring in lunch. We're going to have lunch together. And I can almost guarantee that associate, and I would tell this associate this, I can almost guarantee you come to these meetings and you participate, your production's going to go up because you're going to have a highly leveraged team who are going to support you and help you be more thorough in your medicine, and your clients are going to comply more with your recommendations. So your production's not going to go down. It's going to go up by participating in these meetings and seeing the importance, being a catalyst for implementing the changes that we need to make in the practice. I think you need to have rules of your meeting. People need to know what the rules are. You need to have meeting do's and meeting don'ts, so everyone knows how to conduct themselves in the meeting. So here are just some examples. Meeting dues, we want people to headline their thoughts, manage their listening. We want them to be able to build on others' ideas. We want them to use the how-to and I wish I knew phrase. For example, instead of saying, oh, that'll never work. Oh, that's a bad idea. Instead of saying that, you want someone to say, how exactly do you see that happening? How exactly do you see that working, Julie? I wish I knew how that would work. So it's not, you know, just, you know, throwing them down and lobbing a grenade at them or looking for the fatal flaw in every idea. You're trying to be open, but maybe play devil's advocate a little bit. Stay in the process. No idea is a bad idea, and stay within the time allotted for each agenda item. Meeting don'ts, don't look for the fatal flaw. Don't lob grenades at your coworkers. Don't ramble when you're talking. In a facility, I'm going to talk a little bit about how to facilitate that. Don't persist on a hidden agenda. Don't have more than one meeting at a time. So you need to tell your team members that, you know, we're not going to have little sidebar conversations when someone's speaking. When someone's speaking, we need to respect what they're saying and listen. And don't miss time within the agenda items. Now, I think it's important to have a facilitator in the meeting. And this doesn't necessarily need to be the practice manager every single week or the hospital owner. A facilitator is a person who's just merely facilitating the meeting. And I think this is a great way to develop your people and to improve leadership skills and speaking skills in your staff, because if they can't speak in front of the team and lead the team, then how are we to expect them to talk to clients? So when you develop your team members through facilitating the weekly meetings, this is a great tool to get them to start speaking out loud in front of everyone. And I'm going to give you a job description. That's what I'm pulling up here, just so you can see it. So this is not everybody can be a facilitator, but if you give them a job description and say, okay, guys, we need a facilitator to facilitate the meeting every week, and we're going to assign this to different people throughout the year. And so you could do this weekly, or say, one person's going to be the facilitator for a month, and the next month it's going to be someone else that's going to facilitate the meeting. The facilitator doesn't necessarily do all the talking, but they're just facilitating the discussion. And here's the roles and responsibilities of the team facilitator. The team facilitator will be responsible for leading the team through the agenda. The facilitators are expected to have strong leadership and group process skills. These would include soliciting participation from all team members, keeping the team on task, helping the team to synthesize individual responses into a collective response, shifting conversations away from unproductive tangents back onto the main topic, keep the team focused on the creation of the final product. They need to have the ability to listen, summarize, and reframe. They need to ask questions to stimulate thinking, and they need to summarize discussions for team agreement and decisions. And the facilitator will work in partnership with the secretary, who will be capturing the key points from each of the discussions for the meeting notes. So I highly recommend that you have a facilitator, it doesn't need to be the same person forever and ever. You can delegate this to different people on the team. I also recommend that you have a secretary, and this can also be an assigned responsibility, and you can rotate it amongst your team members. Because when people feel like they're involved and they're in the process and they're not just a quiet participant in these meetings every week, you're going to get a lot more participation. So you have a secretary, and they're assigned every week, and they're going to take notes of pertinent decisions and discussions that we have in weekly meetings. The purpose of having notes is three or fourfold. One, we want to take notes because we're going to have some people, obviously, that are going to be absent from the meeting. And so those meeting notes are going to be typed up, and the folks that were absent, we're going to give them the notes, and they're going to sign off on it that they read them. So we're never going to have this issue, well, I wasn't at the meeting, so I don't know what y'all talked about, and I didn't know we implemented that new policy. The second reason is it's a great way to hold ourselves accountable for what we discussed in last week's meeting. So we're going to bring those meeting notes back every week, and we're going to go over them. The secretary is going to highlight them, and we're going to say, okay, did we do what we said we were going to do? Or did we just talk about it? Why didn't we implement it? If we didn't implement it, then we're going to keep it on the agenda until it does get implemented. We're going to talk about why it wasn't implemented. So it's a way to hold people accountable, because I hear that often. Well, we talk about doing things, and we'll start it, and then it'll just kind of fizzle out. The other thing is, if you keep a record of what you discuss in your meetings, you can go back and look in your binder or whatever and say, yeah, here it is, right here. We decided we were going to do it just like this. So if we need to clarify on what we decided we were going to do, you have it documented somewhere in writing. And a copy needs to be given to everyone on the team. So they have copy of the meeting notes. They're in the loop. And so there should never be an issue of, well, I didn't know about that, because it's been documented. And then I think you should have a kind of a consistent structure in your agenda every week. So when your team members come to the meeting, they get an agenda, a typed agenda, and a copy of the meeting notes. And the agenda has housekeeping, introduction of new team members, obituaries, client service share time, client service training, and medical training. And I'm going to go over each one of these with you. The first one is housekeeping, and that's just the topic of this agenda. And then it's going to have things listed under it, under each, under the housekeeping. And what I recommend doing is having like a clipboard in a central place in the hospital, and anyone on the team can come to that clipboard and write something down that really needs to be addressed to the team at large. But they have to put their name beside it. It can't be an anonymous gripe board. And they are also required to communicate to the team what the issue is, and they have to come up with at least one suggestion to solve that problem. So the facilitator is going to type up the agenda. They're going to go and get the clipboard, and they're going to, you know, under on the agenda, it's going to say housekeeping, and then it's going to have bullet points, and it's going to say, for example, staff schedules dash Susie. So the facilitator is going to say, okay, Susie, it looks like you've got something here about staff schedules. What do you need to share with us? And Susie's going to get up, and she's going to talk about staff schedules, and she's going to come up with a solution, and we're going to have a discussion about that as a team. And maybe it's not a discussion. Maybe it's just information. Or we keep forgetting to, you know, put the blood work out for the lab to pick up. And we've got to, you guys have got to make sure that gets done every night. And what's, you know, a way that we can hold people accountable for that. It's something, you know, those constant frustrations that we don't ever get resolved, this is where we're going to talk about those things. And that's about a 30-minute agenda item. I think these should be timed. So that's a 30-minute agenda item. Yes, but you can also, managers and doctors can put things on the clipboard also. So it's out in the middle because we're an open, communicative hospital. We're going to talk about stuff. Whiteboard in the break area. Yeah, however you want to do it. I mean, it's just basically, it's an agenda item for us to talk about the operations of our hospital and issues that need to be resolved. The second agenda item, this is maybe just a 5-10 minute agenda item. It may be on your weekly meeting. It may not be, just depending upon if you have any new team members. But I've talked all day about recruiting and hiring the right people and getting them orientated and trained. And this is a great way to get that new team member to start feeling like they're an integral part of the team. Go around the room, have everyone introduce themselves to that new employee, tell them their name, their position, how long they've been in the practice, and then have each new employee, existing employee, share with that new employee something that is unique and special about your hospital. And so that new employee starts to feel a sense of pride of being part of this team. And so that's just a quick 10-minute agenda item. Yes. He said, what happens if you have a team member who's just very hesitant to give positive suggestions and responses? And when they have that forum, everyone's just quiet and they don't share anything. That's a difficult one. I mean, I'm not sure, is it because you don't have enough meetings and so people are intimidated to talk out loud? Because sometimes I go into practices where there is no communication, and once you start opening up the lines of communication, they're just scared to death to talk. Or is it a culture that is intimidating and people fear making mistakes in your practice? Or is it that there isn't anything positive to say? I mean, I'm not really sure. It's really hard to know exactly what would perpetuate team members not wanting to talk out loud. It's either that we're not communicating enough or there's not enough reason to communicate positive things. The next agenda item, this is probably about a 20-minute agenda item. It's called obituaries. This is kind of a threefold purpose. This is a great way for veterinarians to share their knowledge with the healthcare team. So one person on the team is required to bring all the medical records of the animals that died in your practice over the last 7 days. This is also an opportunity for you to attach a sympathy card and pass them around, and everyone on the team can sign a special note to that client. If they didn't know that client specifically, maybe they just signed their name. But if they did know that client and that pet intimately, maybe they'll write something special in there. And that, how do you handle that if you're paperless? You can print out the report of what went on with that case. So the doctor and the healthcare team members that were involved in the death of that pet, maybe it was euthanasia, maybe the animal died at home, or, you know, whatever the situation is, we want to we want the doctor to explain the medical issues related to that case. So we start learning how the doctors in your practice medicine. And we start understanding the progression of diseases and illness and things like that. So we start learning just by hearing these stories. Because people learn through stories and through pictures. So the more you can share stories that happen in your hospital, the more your team members are going to learn. So it gives you an opportunity to share a story about this patient that died in your practice. Also, how did we handle the grief of that client? So we talk about the client service aspect of it. Was this during a busy time and, you know, we had a lot of laughing and cackling going on in the pharmacy and treatment area, and we really weren't handling this person's grief like we needed to? So we're able to talk about that whole client experience. Is that client coming back? Do they have other pets? So we're in the loop about this animal dying so that when they come back in, one of your team members isn't going to ask them, oh, how's Buffy doing? And we just put Buffy to sleep 3 days ago. We know what's going on. The next agenda item is client service share time. This is about a 30-minute agenda item, and I think this is probably one of the most important parts of the meeting. If we're going to be a client patient-centered practice, we need to have our ears to the ground listening to what our clients are saying about us. And so you need to train your healthcare team members to listen to what clients are saying. So everyone on the team is required to bring an incident of either positive, exceptional client service incident that happened in your practice or a negative client experience that happened in your practice. And they are required to share it. So we all learn how our clients are being treated. If the incident is a good one, it reinforces our core values and standards of client service, and then we're able to reward that employee or those employees that were involved in that client transaction and be able to recognize and praise them. And they talk about what happened. Again, people learn through stories. And so every time we share a story about something that happened in your practice, everyone's listening and they're engaged and they're thinking to themselves, wow, I'm going to do that next time. That's what I'm going to do. If it's a bad incident, no repercussions are going to be felt to that employee. I mean, we're not going to hit them upside the head and say, you idiot, what were you thinking? Because typically it's not people who fail, it's the system that fails. It's not having the right systems and standards in place. So we're going to listen to that bad experience and we're going to say, okay, what could we have done differently as a team and as a practice? What can we do to make sure those types of things do not happen in our hospital again? And we implement new standards and new systems and new policies to prevent those negative incidences from happening in the future. What this also does is it starts to create some accountability. Now, what I have found in some of the practices I've implemented this in, and I've been in their weekly meetings that have been like in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that I've consulted, is that we've got team members like the gentleman over here who was talking about no one that wanted to talk. This team is probably going to struggle with bringing up the bad incidences. They don't want to bring it up. And I was in a practice in Fort Worth, and every person, it was all positive. Positive, positive, positive. We got all the way through, and it came up to my turn, and I said, surely, guys, something negative happened in your practice this week. Surely something negative happened. Come on. I mean, you guys aren't that perfect. I mean, no one's that perfect. You know, and they just all kind of, you know, looked at me like deer in the headlights. You know, they just didn't want to talk about it because maybe they were afraid they might get in trouble or whatever. So what has to happen, what I recommend doing is that how many people are involved in one client transaction? At least three to five people. So the leaders in your practice need to bring those negative incidences up. And, you know, this is the way I recommend doing it. As the practice manager, you say, you know, now I know we had an incident that happened this week with Mrs. Smith. Who was involved in that client transaction? And people that were involved raise their hand and say, okay, let's start from the very beginning. Who checked Mrs. Smith in? Brandy. Okay, Brandy, tell us what happened from the moment she walked in the door to the moment you passed her off to the next person. And you let Brandy share her part in it. Okay, then who got Mrs. Smith? It was, you know, Kim. Okay, Kim, tell us what happened once you got Mrs. Smith. And we go through the entire client transaction, and every person shares their part in that client transaction. So we know who was involved, what was said, what happened, and now we're going to develop some positive steps to make sure that doesn't happen again. But every week, let's assume that Kim keeps getting brought up every single week. Every single week, every time we have a bad incident, and Kim just seems to be the, you know, the common denominator in negative experiences. How do you think Kim's going to feel? Kim is probably thinking, okay, I need to step up to the plate and do a little bit better, or I'm going to self-eject, because this pressure, this is just too much pressure for me, right? The pressure's just on, because Kim realizes now she's being held accountable for her performance in the practice. And that's a good thing, guys. Okay? It is a good thing. When you think about how many, and I mentioned this to someone earlier today who said, you know, how do I hold people accountable? I feel guilty, you know. You don't feel guilty. How many times when you call your insurance agent or you call any customer service department of any major company, before the customer service rep gets on the phone, there's a recording that says, this call may be monitored for quality assurance. Why do they do that? Because they want to make sure that their people are doing what they were trained to do. Right? So they record every single phone call so they can go back and they can monitor it, and then they can bring that employee in and say, we heard you on the phone with that client and you did not follow policy, or you did not uphold the standards that we've trained you to. But yet, we don't do that in veterinary practices. I was speaking to a group of veterinarians and practice managers from the Oklahoma Veterinary Medical Association back in January, and I had one veterinarian in the group said that he had, I don't remember what business it was, but he had someone call and say, we are calling to follow up regarding our technician that was out at your home. Maybe it was a cable or something. And we just want to follow up and see what type of service they provided you, and we want to make sure they went over the things that they were supposed to go over with you. Can I ask you a few questions? The veterinarian shared this with everybody. He said, so I decided to do that with my staff. He said, because every time I ask them, hey, guys, are we talking to clients about heartworm preventative? When you go in the rooms, do you talk to them about dentistry? And the employees are like, oh, yeah, yeah, we do that. Oh, yeah, we talk to them about all that. And so he decided he was going to take it one step further. And so he hired somebody to actually call clients and do a quality assurance question survey. And guess what? They weren't doing it. They weren't asking the clients the things that we talked to them about. So we do have to hold them accountable for that. And this is just one way of holding your staff accountable, by talking about the negative incidences that happen in your practice at large. We're not going to, you know, point the finger and say, you know, you're always messing up. No, that is not the purpose. This is going to be positive. We're going to look at positive steps to improve our systems and our standards in our hospital. But at the same time, you're kind of upping the ante with your team, because now they know we're going to talk about things that don't go right in our hospital. And people will improve their performance when they know that's going to happen. Yes. Part of that is the purpose, but you want to say, let's talk about that incident, and you're not going to focus in on what that employee shared. You're just going to let everyone share and just say, okay, what steps can we make to make sure that doesn't happen again? And let's just say, for example, that employee just screwed up royally. What could we have done to resolve that? Hopefully that employee is mature and secure enough to say, guys, I'm going to do better next time. If they're not mature and secure enough to say that, then maybe we've got a problem with that employee. But furthermore, why can't we say, hey guys, let's work together as a team, because we're always going to make mistakes. As a leader, you need to be able to say, everybody here, guys, is going to make a mistake. But we as a team, we need to pick up the ball when our team members drop it. And we need to be able to cover each other, and because there are going to be times when things like this happen. So how can we pick up the ball and carry it when we need to for our team members? And so you have to look at it from a positive point of view with your team. So basically, staff members are taught how to listen to our clients and gather important client information and how to act on that information so that we can change and improve the way we do things in our hospital. So the last hour of the meeting, this is when you start delving into training. And if you are, it really is just going to depend on how much standardization do you have in your hospital. Do you actually have standards already set and you just are reinforcing those standards? Or do you not have any written standards in your hospital? When I go into a practice and we're going to start to develop standards, I have a standards handbook, and there's, you know, all different types of tools and resources that you can use. But one of the things I tell my clients is, let's start with the standards handbook. You get your standards handbook, you revise it to your standards, and then you print out 2 or 3 pages every week. You print out 2 pages of, you know, in the client service section, 1 or 2 pages in the medical section, and you develop some type of 30-minute training program around that. And then you test them on those standards. So you spend 30 minutes talking about client service and 30 minutes talking about medical training. And then once you have those standards set, implemented, and everyone's trained and tested on them, then you just reinforce it. And one way you can reinforce that is by assigning a team member to just continually work on improving our client service. You have a library of books, and you start delegating that section for different people, and they come and they prepare something. When you get them involved in the process of presenting a training session for the team, talk about empowerment. Talk about motivating your employee. I did a seminar in January back in Fort Worth, and I had one practice manager tell me that they implemented weekly meetings, and they did this, and they had a kennel assistant that was kind of quiet. She signed up to do a dental training, and she said we were blown away how much that girl knew. She did a phenomenal job training us on dentistry. But she just was quiet. But she had a forum to get up and show her stuff, and she did, and everyone was impressed. And now all of a sudden, they're going to start utilizing her more in the practice. So it's just amazing when you start empowering your people. And then you do medical training. And this is, you know, one staff member or a doctor is assigned every week to discuss with the team a topic related to veterinary medicine. And you want to start with the bread and butter topics of practice. You want to start with physical exams and spend that whole meeting just talking about, you know, what we look for in physical exams, what our standard is, what are the 12 body systems, what are the normals, what are the abnormals, what do they look like. We talk about the report card that we may send home, how often we're going to do the physical exams. So everyone is in the know about physical exams. How do we educate clients about physical exams? And then the next week, we're going to have a test on physical exams. And we're going to start on our next topic, vaccines. What are our vaccine protocols for puppies, kittens, adult dogs, adult cats? What vaccines do we give? Why do we give them? How often do we give them? How do we educate clients about them? What are their costs? What kind of reminders do we send out? So once we get that standard set, we train everyone to it, and then next week they get a test on it. Yes. He said, how do you keep the staff who already have all of that knowledge and have been trained on it 2 or 3 times? How do you keep them interested when the new employees don't have that knowledge? There's a couple of things. One, let them teach it. Okay, let them be the teachers. And then number 2, you don't want to be constantly repeating the common stuff over and over in your meetings. You need to have an outside standards training for new people. Okay? Now, if you feel like you've gone, a year or 2 years has gone by, and you haven't gone through your standards handbook, and people are getting kind of rusty, and they're not doing what our standards are, then you say, okay, guys, we're going through standards training all over again, because we're just not complying with our standards. And we're going to go through them all over again. Now, maybe you need to do that. Everyone needs to have a refresher course. But once you've gotten everyone, the majority of your team, your core people trained on standards, as new people come in, they get standards training outside of the weekly meetings. So that's done either, you know, with a mentor or the practice manager. They do it on their own, and they get tested. There's a lot of different ways that you can do that. Does that make sense? Yes. She said people expect free food. Absolutely. Free food. Food is fun. Meetings have to be fun. And I think food is a great thing to do. And, you know, I mean, these meetings, you got to understand, they are a little bit of an investment because you're paying them for their hourly rate. You're closing down your hospital, so you're not generating any income. You're feeding them lunch. But I can tell you that if you have a structured agenda like this, and they're productive and they're inspiring, your income will go up because people are going to be more informed. They're going to be going out there. They're going to be motivated. It's a great way to rejuvenate your people because you reconnect with them and they go back on the floor and they're excited. Now they have more knowledge and they're going to be able to talk to clients about the services that your practice offers and they know how to talk about it and they're going to feel good about it and clients are going to comply with your recommendations because now you have more people on your team educated and knowledgeable about the things you offer in your practice. Back to medical training, have typewritten notes with drawings. When you explain it, tell them why they're learning and how to market those services and products. And then test them. Do multiple choice, essay makeup test. So you give them a multiple choice or true-false test, and let's say everybody learns differently. You know, some of us are great at multiple choice and true-false testing, where others just, they freak out over tests. But our excellent employees, maybe they need a verbal test where you bring them to the side and you have a conversation with them. I have some practices that when they get a 90% or above on their test, they get a raise. So one of the ways they bring new employees in is they say, okay, Susie, you're going to go through standards training. We have 15 standards tests that you're going to be required to take between now and the next 18 months. And every time you take that test, you have an opportunity to make a 25-cent raise. So I'm going to start you out at $8 an hour, and then over the next 18 months, as you become more and more knowledgeable regarding our services and what we do here in our practice, the more you're worth to us, and so we're going to pay you more for that. Now there's an incentive for them to learn that information, learn those standards. But they've got to get a 90% or above on their test. And this isn't an easy test. This is a test that they're going to have to study for and they're going to have to be engaged in on the weekly meetings or, you know, in the standards. But now performance equals pay, not longevity, not anything else. Performance equals pay. You perform and you do well and you have the knowledge and you're a knowledge worker, then you're going to get paid accordingly. You can plan these in advance. You know, let's map out what we're gonna work on over the next 6 months. Incorporate vendors. You know, where you can utilize, you know, some of these vendors. They'll pay for lunch. They'll do some of the training. Like, you know, if you want, I mean, you know who the players are, the ones that are great with pain management. You want to do a pain management class and everyone be taught on pain management. Maybe it's, you know, heartworm preventative, dermatology, vaccine protocols, you know, whatever. Bring some reps in that can do those things and can educate your team on that 30-minute section. They're not going to come in and do a 3-hour meeting with you. They're going to come in and do, you know, 30 minutes at the end. Okay? Or maybe you skip out on the client service section and you have an hour of medical training. And then next week you do all client service. It just depends on what's going to meet the needs, and you have to tailor it to your practice's needs, but incorporate vendors that can come in and can do some of that training with you. Yes. To prepare for the meeting, like if they've been assigned a task to do it in the meeting. No. I personally think that you need to give them time during their normal 40-hour work week. Give them some time off the clock, not off the clock, but off their role as a technician or a client care specialist. Take them off the floor. Let them go into an office. Give them a few hours to get to prepare for that meeting and to do their research so that they can, you know, be prepared for the meeting. Yes? So passive aggressive. I think that's it. I think you need to come to my next section about confrontation. That veterinarian needs to be confronted. That associate, you need to. I don't know if you're the practice owner, but if you are, I would sit that associate down and say, "Let me tell you what I'm observing about your role here. I see you as a leader. The fact you have DVM at the end of your name, you are a leader by default. Whether you realize it or not, you are a leader here. The team looks up to you because you are a veterinarian in this practice and you play an integral role in the changes that we're making and the systems that we're implementing and the standards that we're implementing. And one of the things I've observed when I hear you talk and I hear some of the things you say to me and others is that you're critical of what goes on in this practice and you're critical of the team. But then when we get into the team at large, you don't participate and you're not influencing the team in a positive way. And I need that to change. I need you to be the leader that I need you to be. Do I have that commitment from you? Does that make sense? So it's having that meeting and just confronting that head on and getting a commitment from that associate that they're going to change their behavior. And otherwise they're not going to. Yes. He said, is that the job of the practice owner or the practice manager? I think it's both. I think practice managers can confront associate veterinarians anytime it doesn't have anything to do with medicine. I think they can confront associate veterinarians. But the practice owner needs to empower them to do that. So I would not have a problem with a practice. I don't think there's any reason why a practice manager could not sit an associate veterinarian down and say, I really need you to be on my team. I need you to be on my side. Let's do this together. And let's get this team in tip-top shape. And I need your help doing that. And here's what I'm observing in the meetings. I'm observing that you're not participating. You're not contributing. And I need you because you have influence on these people. You have a tremendous amount of influence. And so I need you to be aligned with me and what we're trying to get accomplished. And then lastly, make it fun. Meetings need to be fun, and there's all different types of ways you can make meetings fun. Food is fun, games are fun, prizes are fun, chocolate is fun. So you can make it fun, and it doesn't have to be anything extravagant, but you know, you can make it fun. I had one practice where we did standards training. This owner created a vision for his team. The team was involved in the vision, and they wanted to get standards implemented immediately. So they closed down their practice early on a Friday. They left the hospital, and they came to a hotel. We did standards training from like 7 o'clock until 10 o'clock one evening. And then they were closed all day Saturday, and we did standards training all day Saturday. And then Sunday was a play day for the team, and they opened back up Monday morning. And at the end of Saturday, we played Family Feud. And it was just a way to see how much they had retained. And we had so much fun, and we had posters. We made posters of all the standards that we had developed, and so that they could see it, and we gave away prizes. And they had so much fun, and they implemented those standards. They started back on Monday doing the standards and implementing that as part of their daily routine. And they were tested on it, on the majority of the standards. And so you can make this fun. And, you know, you play games and you get people involved in the process. I'm a big advocate of role-playing. I think role-playing is a great thing to do. People get so nervous when they have to do role-playing. But it's effective. because you're asking them to act out how they would handle a client situation. If they can't put their money where their mouth is, then we got a problem. So I think role playing is excellent, and you can get them more and more comfortable with role playing by doing it in phases. Like the first week, break them into groups of two and give them a scenario and say, okay, I'm going to give you 5 minutes. You write down together as a team how you're going to handle this particular client scenario. And so you give them 5 minutes and you say, okay, let's go with the first team. Tell us your scenario and tell us how you're going to handle it. And they get to use their notes. So we go around and we do that and we critique everybody. Okay, how did we do? Is there anything we could have done better? Would we say it differently? Next week, we're going to do it again. This time, we're not going to break up into teams. Everyone's going to get their own scenario. And they're going to get 5 minutes to figure out what they're going to say. And then we're going to go around the room and everyone's going to do it. Next week, they're going to come back. We're going to do role playing again. This time, we're going to give them a scenario and we're going to start right on the spot. They're not going to have any time to prepare because they don't have to prepare when the phone rings, do they? Do they have time to prepare when the client walks in the door? When they walk into the exam room? No. So they should be able to do it right there on the spot in front of the healthcare team. But they know they're being critiqued, and so they get nervous. But that's all part of it. You want to build up their confidence to the point where they know the information so well, they have no problem saying in front of everybody, this is what I'm going to say to the client. But you have to. You don't just do role-playing once. You do it for a month to where it just becomes second nature to them to say, you know, that 80 to 90% wellness. Why would we do fecal tests? Why do we do heartworm testing? Why would we recommend heartworm preventative? Why do we recommend physical exams every 6 months? What is the importance of requiring pre-anesthetic blood work on all anesthetic procedures? So you get those routine things that they're going to be talking to clients about. Why is it important to have a dog's teeth cleaned, a cat's teeth cleaned? So you start, you know, those things that we talk to our clients about on a routine basis, you need to role play with them. And those things can be fun and, you know, give away a prize to the team that did the best, you know. So there's a lot of great ways where you can make it fun. Questions? We're done? Okay, we're out of time. So if you have any questions, come on up. We got 15 more minutes, and we'll go to the next session. Thank you.